The Navy says two barges are set to arrive tonight in Baltimore to begin removing key bridge debris from the Patapsco River. CBS's David Martin.
Maryland officials say that is the most urgent priority because the port employs some 15,000 people. Removing the debris will also make it possible to recover the bodies of the four construction workers who are still missing.
Once that work starts, it'll be a 24/7 operation until the channel is clear and the port can reopen. Former crypto boss Sam Bankman-Fried is headed to prison for fraud. CBS's Errol Barnett reports the judge did not buy his apology.
Judge Lewis Kaplan said Sam Bankman-Fried said one thing to the public, that he supported regulation, while privately saying, quote, F expletive regulators.
Today, former President Trump was among those mourning an NYPD officer killed in the line of duty.
The police are the greatest people we have. There's nothing and there's nobody like them, and this should never happen.
CBS News Brief, I'm Monica Ricks.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Four people are dead in Rockford, Illinois, and seven others are badly injured. A man is in jail facing charges of stabbing them all yesterday afternoon. Reporter Liz Nagy is in Rockford.
Neighbors are bewildered and rattled by this deadly afternoon.
Unbelievable. Sad.
Investigators are trying to piece together a fast-moving rampage they say was at the hands of a single man.
Wisconsin should be a safer place for judges now that Governor Evers has signed 29 bipartisan crime bills into law. Three of them are in response to 143 violent threats against Wisconsin judges in the past year. A retired judge was shot and killed in New Lisbon 2 years ago by a man he had once sentenced to prison. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WRJN News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. A fatal car collision in Kenosha County claimed the lives of a driver and a cow this morning. At around 5 a.m., dispatch got a call about a car in the road on 31st Street near Highway B. A short time later, deputies got to the scene to find a car that had hit the cow, then smashed into a fence, allowing more cows to walk onto the road. Officials say the roof of the car had been completely torn off. The road was shut down for about 4 hours while investigators canvassed the scene. The identity of the deceased driver has not been released. Garbage in Racine won't get picked up tomorrow. Good Friday has public works on holiday. That means collection days are getting pushed back in the city of Racine. You can sign up for garbage alerts on the city's website. There will be normal trash collection in Kenosha tomorrow. And that's what you need to know. I'm Stuart J. Waddles, WRJN News.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
These two referendum that you will see on your April 2nd ballot. What is it that Republicans are after here? You cut funding for local elections. You restrict the hours. You restrict early voting. You intimidate and scare election workers so droves of them are quitting. I wonder where all of this is heading.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
The Bucks lose Pat Beverly. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It happened Sunday night. Bucks guard Pat Beverly says his right wrist kept bothering him during warm-ups. He still played in the game against the Thunder, then had x-rays the next day.
Talked to the doctor and informed me that I tore a ligament in my right wrist and gonna need it surgically repaired, which takes 3 to 4 months.
Beverly likely done for the season. The Bucks face the Pelicans tonight in New Orleans. College basketball tonight at the Kohl Center in Madison. The Badgers women's team faces the Illinois State Redbirds in the NIT. Baseball, the Brewers and Mets game canceled due to poor weather in New York. The two teams will try again tomorrow. Bob Uecker says he'll be back in the broadcast booth for opening day next week at American Family Field. Then it's day-to-day after that. Uecker is 90 years old and has been calling Brewers games since 1971.
Just a bit outside.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight and a low in the upper 20s. Mostly sunny and a high in the low 40s tomorrow. Rain and a few thunderstorms possible Friday night into early Saturday, then partly sunny Saturday afternoon, high low 50s. Another rain chance Sunday, high mid 40s. It's 46 right now.
As you age, you may have questions about finding transportation, healthy meals, or other services around your home and in your community. And the Elder Care Locator has the answers at 1-800-677-1116. Our caring advisors can connect you to trustworthy local experts and the support you need to age well at home. Real people, real assistance, and real connections are just a phone call away with the Elder Care Locator. 1-800-677-1116.
Friday on Matt and Air on Air, we recombobulate with Dan Schaefer at 10:30, and me, Greg Bach, is in charge of the show. Join us.
Don Rosen in the morning, and you're home for the Packers. 1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM WRJN.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome, Thursday night Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated Educators Talking Education, 855-752-4842 is the number if you want to jump in and give us a call. Yeah, man, Johnny, getting a lot of feedback for last night for us taking on the billionaires, pointing out that the possibility that there are Republicans who like public schools and therefore who can stand up for democracy, you know, pointing it out. And as we keep saying, core democratic values, doesn't matter what team you want to play for, as long as you support core democratic values and support public schools. Hey, we're going to give you a shout out. So, Johnny, great feedback from the show last night. Tonight.
Awesome. That's great to hear.
Great guest tonight. And you know, I want to jump right into this here. He is a writer and educator who challenges the status quo in academia. In his latest blog post, When ChatGPT Comes for Scholarship, John delves into the controversial use of generative AI in academics research. Or we can have it this way. Introducing John Warner, the rebel with a cause in academia, in his latest post, When ChatGPT Comes for Scholarship, John takes a swing at the use of generative AI in research, calling out the mindless production of academic papers. I don't know, John Warner, which intro did you like better, man? Because whichever one you pick, you're going to make somebody happy and somebody sad.
I would say, I'm going to be honest, I think I prefer the second one in the spirit of the show, having been here before.
There it is.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, he is John Warner. And again, why they can't write Killing the Five Paragraph Essay. You can see a lot of his blog posts in Inside Higher Education. John, welcome back to Busted Pencils.
Oh, always a great pleasure to be here with you guys.
Okay, so John, we're going to take on AI, and we were having a little fun before the show, me, you, and Johnny dealing with this, kind of, whoa, what's happening? But John, I start those intros. I had ChatGPT-4 write them for me, and you actually preferred one over the other. So was the number two ChatGPT much more in tune with the real John Warner?
It's more in tune with like the spirit of the show, right? Of like a sort of having fun, putting an attitude into discussions about subjects that can sometimes seem a little dry out to outside people, and being a little bit passionate. So yeah, the second one would be my personal preference.
So the first one would be more like the academic research, which is kind of what we're talking about here. It's When ChatGPT Comes for Scholarship, Inside Higher Education. Take a look at it. I just want to quote from this, John, a couple of times. The inevitable has now happened, and what is clearly unedited generative AI content is finding its way into, apparently, peer-reviewed publications. It's possible that this practice is already disturbingly widespread. Peer-reviewed journal articles. John, wait a minute. That's the academic absolute, you know, kind of biblical writing. Like, that's sacred writing. You mean to tell me that you think ChatGPT is being used by some of these academics?
Yeah, no, we know it is, because the indicator, right, that sort of triggered this is people were did a search on the sort of boilerplate language that ChatGPT uses when it can't really answer the question, where it will say something like, as a large language model, I cannot blah, blah, blah. And so people did search for the string of text, and hundreds and thousands of articles came up from published databases. So we know not only is ChatGPT being used, but it's literally unedited in the way we would accuse a student of cheating if they put this kind of thing in their work. And the, you know, it's not that ChatGPT couldn't be useful in academic publishing. I was talking to a physician and medical professor out in California yesterday, and he talked about how GPT is a tool to sort of summarize data tables, right? Mm. Something that is purely descriptive,
right?
That has to happen in the stuff he publishes, could be fantastic and a huge time saving, and is no different than what would happen if a human did it, in the same way like a calculator calculates sums or multiplies, divides, the same way a human does. But there are parts of, at least I hope we believe this, there are parts of academic writing that we believe should be the product of human thought, right? We outsource all of that to something that cannot think, cannot feel, cannot read, and cannot reason, then what's the point? Why keep doing this stuff?
Man, I don't know. I know some full professors that, if it sounds like you just described them there the way you cannot. No, Johnny Lupinacci, come on, man. You're out there, 70 plus publications. Johnny,
hey,
what do you got, man?
Oh, man, I'm just soaking this up because, Tim, you know, you and I have gone back and forth and we've sort of taken sides on this, even though I'll be honest, I'm on the fence because I originally didn't know a whole lot about AI. And I was sort of like, oh, this is just garbage. It's just a search machine. And then, you know, we started talking about how it came up and how many of our undergrads and grad students were using it and saying, hey, here are some real practical ways we're using it. It's a great way to get unstuck in our writing. You know, I'm asking like for some suggestions on some readings. They're also finding some ways it was wrong. You know, and I was tinkering around with some early versions. And, you know, I was just like, this is just garbage. This is garbage stuff here. You know, maybe it'll help us speed up some meaningless content. And to me, it felt like, you know what it's going to do? It's going to really make the tool of writing more creative, more meaningful. It's going to make the professions of journalism, right, and being an author more valued, because I know so many young people out there who love writing, right? Who got the idea to go into the profession, and then they ended up writing meaningless content, and they felt like there really wasn't much use of their skill. Well, I think that's going to eliminate that, because now AI will do the meaningless production of words, and we'll really have to lean on like what John said, human production, like the human idea. And then, Tim, you started taking me down this whole like Alice in Wonderland trip. I'm talking about like I'm no hallucinogenics necessary, right, where you've trained your computer to know kind of the things you're writing about. And it sounds like you, it's writing similar to you. I'm still skeptical. And I'm saying, Tim, are you sure you're not just writing this and sending me something you've written? But, you know, it did pique my interest, because as someone who writes every day, I thought for sure, hey, it would be really great. Sure, if you could speed up some of my work, maybe summarize some of the things I'm a little long-winded about. You see, I'm a long-winded dude. I'm still talking
like
on
now,
my one little spot. Yeah. So what I'm saying, so we've gone back and forth. Tim's pro AI. I'm still against it, but I could be sold on it. And, you know, and John's a writing, you know, you talk about teaching writing. You talk about the importance of writing, the craft and the art of it. So, I mean, you're here as an expert, but also listeners and myself, selfishly, we want you to settle the beef.
Well, so this technology, right? And when we're talking about AI, we're talking about, in this moment, when we're talking about writing, we're talking about a very specific category of AI, generative AI, or the large language model, right? So it's important to put boundaries around what these things are. And it is a potentially useful tool for the production of syntax. But what I would like to suggest is there's a difference between writing and the production of syntax. Even though the ultimate byproduct of writing is a string of syntax, right? Words that we can read and take in. Reality is that the process of writing, that is when we write, writing is when humans write, writing is thinking. We are both trying to capture an idea or a feeling or an experience. And while we're doing that, because we're in the midst of it, we're also seeing that idea or feeling or experience be altered by the process of writing. So what winds up on the page is likely somewhat different than whatever our initial intention was. And that is an important process and a uniquely human process. And it's also a fantastic process for learning, right? Like writing about something is a great way to learn about something. ChatGPT, Claude Opus, all the other large language models don't do anything like that. They are syntax retrieving machines, matching patterns based on a truly unfathomable amount of other syntax that it's digested, right? It is a mechanical marvel, but it is a fundamentally mechanical process. And it is not what humans do when we write. So if the human process does not matter in any way, sure, outsource it. But I would ask, What are the consequences of that? Even something where you're like, oh, I got to get this out of the way, or it's easier to do it this way. You may be denying yourself an experience that will reveal something to you that you otherwise might not have recognized, right? Mm-hmm. Or you may have a sort of internal experience, something like something we've all done, which is write recommendations for students, right? Often time consuming, sometimes burdensome process. It might be tempting to try to outsource this kind of thing to a GPT. But the reality is when I write a recommendation for a student, I am re-experiencing that course with that student or that relationship I had with that student, as well as the teacher I was at the time I taught that student. And this process of reflection that allows me to write those recommendations has a profound effect on how I look at my own work. And really, that's the sort of thing that led me to change a lot of how I taught writing, because a student would ask me for a recommendation. I would like look up what they wrote for me. I would look at my comments for them. I would think about them and be like, man, that didn't work as well as I thought it should. Maybe I should do this differently, right? Ultimately, our lives are lived through experience. And if we deny ourselves experiences around writing, just to have a product more quickly and more efficiently, we may be losing something essential. Now, it doesn't mean never do it. It doesn't mean it has no use, but I'm a skeptic as to where this stuff comes into play, particularly in teaching and learning contexts.
He's a skeptic, our guest, John Warner from Inside Higher Education.
Oh,
man. We're talking about his newest piece in Inside Higher Education, When ChatGPT Comes for Scholarship. It's Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. The number is 855-752-4842. Johnny wants this argument settled between the two of us. I don't know if we'll get there, but we're going to come back.
He settled it. I'm the champ.
All right. The champ. More.
You're listening to WRJN, Southeastern Wisconsin's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Most of us can agree the decision to have an abortion should be between a person and their doctor. Politicians should have no say at all. Thankfully, Senator Tammy Baldwin is standing up for our rights and working to keep politicians out of our medical decisions. After Roe v. Wade, the court case that protected abortion rights was overturned. Tammy Baldwin introduced the Women's Health Protection Act, which would ensure access to abortion everywhere in the United States, including here in Wisconsin. The bill would end extreme abortion bans that have no exceptions for rape, incest, or the life of the mother, and threaten doctors with criminal charges for providing abortion care. Senator Baldwin also introduced legislation that would protect the right to travel across state lines for reproductive health care and safeguard access to contraception. Call Senator Tammy Baldwin at 202-224-5653. Tell her thank you for fighting back against extreme abortion bans. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
You're listening to News Talk and Sports for Racine and Kenosha, WRJN.
We crawl. Yeah. Well, you don't have to crawl on your knees for us, but it's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. That's what we do every night of the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Yeah, Busted Pencils. It's 855-752-4842. Our guest is John Warner. He is the author of Why They Can't Write, Killing the Five-Paragraph Essay. He's also blogger for Inside Higher Education. His latest piece, When ChatGPT Comes for Scholarship, Let's Do Less So That It Matters More. Talking about the drawbacks, and on this one too, very specifically, let's just explain this too. When we talk about academic writing and academic research, what that means for our listeners. So all of the, you know, so Johnny and I have another life as professors in higher education. And one of the ways that you get to stay working as a professor is by writing academic research. Or as my son would say, that really boring stuff, Dad, that you write all the time, you know, that no one wants to read. Now, I didn't really have much of an argument against him saying, yeah, Luke, I mean, academic writing isn't sexy. It isn't necessarily fun. It has to be done, though. It is a currency. If you're a professor in a higher ed institution, it's a currency that lets you keep your job in some places. And so it's really important. And depending on where you're at, the amount of academic writing that you produce as a professor has a really profound effect on whether you will stay there. So, John, I see this piece as kind of like pushing up against that and saying, wait a minute, Tim, you already know your son already thought your stuff was really not that great anyway. And now if it's not that great and we could churn it out really quickly, would this be a temptation then for people to say, you know what, I just got to get this crap out there and published. I might as well use ChatGPT. Is that where you're coming from?
Yeah, I mean, currency is the exact right word, because what we're in is a system where the creation of academic writing and publishing in academic circles, which is supposed to have an underlying purpose of building the collective store of knowledge, right? This is why we ask professors to publish, because you have very specific expertise, and we give you, as part of your job, your enumerated duties, we say you should take some of your time to do this work, right? Because we believe, at least in theory, that we value this stuff because we need to generate new knowledge and then share that. But what happens, this is an example of Campbell's Law. I think we've talked about this in previous episodes. But Campbell's Law, right, where essentially the measure becomes the goal. And so if we decide the proxy for a good scholar is the number of things they've published, the only thing that matters is the number of things they published. The process that leads to the publishing of those things becomes largely irrelevant. And so we have this really overproduction of scholarship in a lot of cases. And even they've charted this in different disciplines, but my field's English and the humanities, but like the generation prior to mine, I turned 54 next week, but my professors to get a job, like as a creative writer, would have published a couple of stories in, a reputable journal. By the time I finished graduate school in the 1990s, you would need to get a job as a tenure track professor. You would need to have published a full book, right? With the Commercial University Press. That is now even more extreme, right? Like my former employer had an opening a couple of years ago, and they're like, one book mandatory, more than one suggested. if you've like written a screenplay too, that would be nice, right? It's the sort of, it's this escalation because we only know how to count rather than evaluate, rather than hold to the principles that this stuff is supposed to represent, which is the building of knowledge. And so my feeling, and I write about this in the blog post, is this is ChatGPT is an opportunity to re-examine the values we attach to this work. It's the same of how we teach writing. It's the same of college admissions. It's all these things that now are under threat because we have this magic machine that can churn out a simulation of this work. Why continue to do that if ChatGPT is doing it? It's a simulation. Mm-hmm. If a simulation passes muster, then we should rethink what we're doing because we are humans and we're not here to just engage in a simulation.
I wonder though, I see you're hitting on that though, and this is kind of the rub, and we'll let Johnny jump in here, is that, you know, does the requirement, let's put it out there, the accountability system that says if you don't produce numbers, you will not get to stay because it is the currency. And so the reality here is that, you know, for the most part, I need to get this done so I can actually continue to do good work and produce good knowledge. So I'm going to use ChatGPT over here to meet the threshold. And while ChatGPT is helping me meet the threshold, I'm going to do really great knowledge creating writing. Johnny Lupinacci.
I don't know, Tim. I've struggled with this one quite a bit because I can't imagine ChatGPT helping me do meaningful writing. That's why I said I'm on the fence. You're showing me some cool tools, and I'm like, maybe I could learn, because I'm remembering being a kid in a classroom where we didn't quite have graphing calculators and all the cool tools. And then we had mathematical softwares and all kinds of cool things really helped speed up how we did mathematics. And as a mathematician and a math teacher, you know, I fought that for a while. And I thought, this is actually a great tool. There's a way to bring the tool to the craft, to the discipline. So I'm open-minded, Tim, about this. But as someone, you know, who half of my work week is writing, right? And so I'm thinking about, you know, that would it help make my time more efficient? I'm on the fence about right now. I'm a hard no. I'm like, man, I can't imagine. It seems like it makes me have to do more work because of the way I'm thinking, I'm writing. The writing is helping me think, and it's planning out what I'm doing. It's a process.
Johnny is exactly right. He's using writing as thinking. He doesn't know what he wants to say until he starts saying it, right? So you could give a prompt to a large language model, and it'll generate something, right? Mm-hmm. And you might decide that's good enough, but it's not the same thing. It's just a string of syntax that is not ultimately the shape of the idea that would have come out if Johnny went through his process of writing, right? If all that matters is the product and that string of syntax, then it's absolutely more efficient. And if that's where society is going, like, it doesn't matter, just let ChatGPT churn it out, then, you know, God bless. Let students have ChatGPT do all their work. Let's have ChatGPT grade everything, and we'll go sit on our floating chaise lounges like the characters in WALL-E, right? Drinking soda and watching stuff on TikTok. I mean, these are the choices. We have a choice over what matters. And ChatGPT is sort of forcing this conversation to happen more quickly than we would like and causing a lot of panic, but it's not an impossible thing. And really what it's revealing for me is that a lot of this stuff was already going on before ChatGPT. It's just a matter of it now being exposed.
Oh, it's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Our guest, John Warner. Yeah, ChatGPT, is that real writing or not? Johnny Lupinacci is a skeptic. John Warner's helping us out. When we get back, though, I'm going to talk a little bit about going, however, you made a great point, John, though, can it do some things well? More when we get back.
Hey, everybody, Todd Lobo, Friday, noon to 2, talking to Brady Ewing and The Week in Review right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. March Madness brackets can be fun, but gambling addiction is a real problem. Live sports bets in Wisconsin are limited to tribal casinos, but people can still cross state lines to gamble online. Rose Blazinski heads the Wisconsin Council on Problem Gambling.
We know that more people are going to do it, and we also know that more people are going to be